Oh, that's it then?
He stood up, weaving. Marks stood with him, readying his hands to catch Thomas if he fell. I stood up too, motioning to Anthony that we needed the check. He had already printed it out, so he grabbed it from beside the register and placed it on the counter. I scribbled my name and reached for Thomas's arm. Okay, let's go. Thomas pulled his arm away.
You're dumping me, remember?
Fine. Can Marks walk you? I asked. Thomas pointed at me.
No.
He chuckled, reached for Marks's shoulder, and they walked toward the door. I blew my hair from my face.
I want to hear more about this weekend, Val said, but I'll let it go this time.
We joined the boys on the sidewalk, and then we watched as Marks struggled to keep Thomas walking in a straight line. The four of us took the elevator to the sixth floor, and Val and I watched as Marks fished Thomas's keys out of his pocket and opened his door.
Okay, buddy, tell the girls good night. Wait.
Thomas grabbed the door jamb while Marks pulled at his middle from inside the condo.
Wait.
Marks released him, and Thomas nearly fell forward. I reached for him and helped him to stand upright.
You promised you'd stay with me,
he said. The misery in his eyes was unbearable. I glanced at Val, who was quickly shaking her head, before I turned back to Thomas. Thomas, I began. Then I looked to Val and Marks. I've got him. You guys should head home.
You sure?
Marks asked. I nodded, and after a few glances over her shoulder, Val took the elevator with Marks to the lobby. Thomas hugged me, desperately pulling on me.
I'll sleep on the floor. I just feel like a piece of shit. My whole family hates me, and they should. They should.
Come on, I said, walking him inside. I kicked the door shut, reached back to lock the bolt, and then helped Thomas to his bed. He fell onto his back and covered his eyes with his hands.
The room is spinning.
Put your foot on the floor. That helps.
My feet are on the floor, he slurred.
I yanked him down and then placed his feet on the rug. Now they are. He began to laugh, and then his eyebrows pulled in.
What did I do? What the fuck did I do, Lise?
Hey, I said, climbing into the bed next to him. Just go to sleep. It will be different tomorrow. He turned, burying his face into my chest. I reached up for a pillow, propping my head. Thomas sucked in a breath, and I hugged him tight.
I fucked up, he said. I really fucked up.
We'll make it right.
How can we make it right if you're done with me?
Thomas, stop. We'll fix everything tomorrow. Just sleep. He nodded and then took a deep breath before exhaling slowly. When his breathing evened out, I knew he was asleep. I lifted my hand to glance at my watch, and I rolled my eyes.
We would both be exhausted in the morning.
I hugged him again, and then I leaned down to kiss his cheek before slowly drifting off to sleep. Chapter 21 I tapped my nails on the computer as I listened to the recorded conversation coming through my headphones. The Japanese was broken, mostly slang, but Agent Grove had gotten the numbers wrong again. This time, he had even falsely identified a location as a supposed vacant building next to a hospital when it was actually next to a medical professional building 7 miles away. I picked up the receiver of my landline and hit the first speed dial button.
Office of the Assistant Special Agent in Charge. Constance speaking.
Agent Lindy for Agent Maddox, please.
I'll put you through, Constance said.
Her reply took me off guard. She usually at least checked with him first.
Lise, Thomas answered.
His voice was soft and tinged with surprise. I'm listening to these Yakuza recordings. Grove... I glanced over my shoulder and then away from my open door. He's getting brazen, almost sloppy. He's falsely identifying locations. I feel like something is getting ready to go down.
I'm working on it.
We have to remove him before he gets wind of Travis's recruitment anyway. What are we waiting for?
A staged accident. That's the only way Taru won't know we're on to him and Benny. Otherwise, we could jeopardize the entire operation.
I see.
What are you doing for lunch?
He asked. Fuzzies with Val.
Okay.
He chuckled nervously.
What about dinner?
I sighed. I'm playing catch-up. I'll be working late tonight.
Me too. I'll take you home and we can grab takeout on the way.
I looked out the wall of windows to the squad room. Val was on the phone, having no clue that we now had plans for lunch.
I'll let you know, I said.
The odds of us finishing at the same time are slim.
Just let me know, Thomas said, before the line clicked.
I placed the receiver on its base and sank back into my throne. Once again, the headphones covered my ears, and I pressed play on the keyboard. The morning had felt like any other, except I'd felt tired and woken up alone in Thomas's bed. He had knocked on my door as I was getting dressed for work. When I had opened the door, he'd given me a bagel and cream cheese with a coffee. The ride to work had been awkward, and my thoughts had led to researching car dealerships and dreading the possibility that I might have to resort to flying back to Chicago and driving my Camry all the way to San Diego. Just as the recording was getting interesting, my door flew open and then slammed shut. Thomas flicked back the side of his suit jacket and put a hand on his hip, desperately trying to think of something to say. I yanked off my headphones. What? My mind raced with different awful scenarios, all leading back to Thomas's family.
You're avoiding me, and Constance said you were on the phone with a car dealership when she walked by. What's going on?
I need a car?
Why? I drive you to and from work.
I do go to other places besides work, Thomas. He walked to my desk and put his palms flat on the smooth wood, looking me in the eyes.
Be straight with me.
You said you were going to explain more about Camille. How about now? I asked, crossing my arms. He looked behind him.
What, here?
The door's closed. Thomas sat in a chair.
I'm sorry I called you Camille. We were talking about her, tensions were high, and I could hear her and Trent laughing. It was an honest mistake.
You're right, Jackson. I forgive you. Thomas's cheeks flushed.
I feel terrible.
You should.
You're not really done, Lise. Not after one stupid mistake.
I don't think we ever really got started, did we?
I have some pretty strong feelings here. I think you do, too. I know you don't like to be out of your comfort zone, but this is just as frightening for me, I assure you.
I'm not afraid anymore. I took the leap. You just didn't go with me. His expression changed. He was looking inside of me, into the depths I couldn't hide.
You're running. I scare the hell out of you.
Stop. His jaw muscles danced under his skin.
I won't chase you, Lise. If you don't want me, I'll let you walk.
Good, I said with a relieved smile. Saves us both a lot of time. He begged me with his eyes.
I didn't say I wanted you to.
Thomas, I said, leaning forward. I'm busy. Please let me know if you have any questions about my FD-302. I'll leave it with Constance by end of day. He stared at me in disbelief and then stood, turning for the door. He twisted the knob but hesitated, looking over his shoulder.
You can still catch a ride with me to and from work until you figure out the car situation.
Thank you, I said, but I've got something worked out with Val. He shook his head and blinked. Then he opened the door before closing it behind him. He turned right instead of left toward his office, and I knew he was going to the fitness room. In the time it took Thomas to clear the security doors, Val scurried into my office and sat down. That looked ugly. I rolled my eyes. It's done.
What's done?
We kind of had a thing over the weekend. It's over.
Already? He looks miserable. What did you do to him?
Why is it automatically my fault? I snapped. When Val arched an eyebrow, I continued. I agreed to try something similar to a relationship, and then he admitted to still being in love with Camille. Then he called me Camille, so... I played with the pencils in their holder, trying to keep from getting angry about it all over again.
He called Camille?
She asked, confused. No, he called me Camille, as in, called me by her name by mistake.
In bed?
She shrieked. No, I said, my face twisting into disgust. On the beach. We were arguing. I'm still not sure about what.
Oh, this sounds promising. I guess we should have known two control freaks weren't going to get along.
That's what he said, too. Oh, by the way, you and I have a lunch date.
We do?
That's what I told Thomas, so yes.
But I have plans with Marks.
Oh, no. You owe me.
Fine, she said, resting her elbow on my desk and then pointing at me. But you're going to give details about the whole weekend.
Sure. Right after you tell me all about your marriage. She rolled her eyes.
No, she whined. See, this is why I didn't want you to know.
Realizing that not everyone wants to spill their every thought, feeling, and secret is a good lesson for you to learn. Glad I finally have some leverage. She glared at me.
You're a bad friend. See you at lunch.
I smiled at her, situating my headphones back onto my ears, and Val returned to her desk. The rest of the day went on as usual, as did the day after that. Val would wait for me every morning, right outside the building. The better days were when I wouldn't catch Thomas in the elevator. For the most part, he would be polite. He stopped coming to my office, instead directing me through emails from Constance. We collected evidence against Grove, and in turn used Taru's trust in him to gain intelligence. The answers hid within the small talk and smug comments between Grove and Taru and his associates, like how gullible the Bureau was and how easy our system was to get around if one knew the right person. Exactly 2 weeks after Thomas and I had given Polanski the disputably good news about Travis, I found myself in Cutter's alone, bantering with Anthony.
So I told him, "Bitch, you don't even know me," he said, cocking his head to one side. I offered a weak clap and then held up my glass. "Well done." Sorry that I got ratchet for a second, but that is what I told him.
"I think you handled it well," I said, before taking another sip. Anthony leaned over and jerked up his head once.
"Why don't you come in here with Maddox anymore? Why doesn't Maddox come in here at all anymore?"
"Because the women of the world are systematically ruining his favorite places for him."
"Oh, that's lame. And they say I'm a drama queen."
His eyes widened for a beat.
"Who are they?"
"You know," he said, dismissively waving his hand.
"They," he pointed at me. "You all need to fix it. It's screwing with my tips."
He glanced up and then back down.
"Uh-oh, Aquanet, 11 o'clock.
I didn't turn. I didn't need to. Sawyer was breathing in my ear in much less time than it should have taken him to walk to my chosen stool.
"Hey, beautiful. They won't take your money at the strip club?" I asked.
He grimaced.
"You're in a shitty mood. I know you're not teacher's pet anymore, but no need to project your anger."
I took a drink. "What do you know about being teacher's pet? No one likes you."
"Ouch," Sawyer said, offended.
"I'm sorry, that was harsh. But in my defense, you would make at least one friend if you signed your damn papers." He blinked.
"Wait, what are we talking about?"
"Your divorce papers."
"I know, but are you saying we're not friends anymore?"
"We are not," I said, before taking another drink.
"Oh, for fuck's sake, Lise. You spend one weekend with Maddox and you're drinking the Kool-Aid."
He shook his head and took a swig from the beer bottle Anthony had set down in front of him.
"I'm disappointed."
"Just sign the papers. How hard is that?"
"Contrary to popular belief, ending a marriage is hard."
"Really? I thought it would be easier for a cheater."
"I didn't cheat."
I arched an eyebrow.
"Her," he gestured to his head and eyes, "thing was driving me nuts. Do you have any idea what it's like to be with someone and not be allowed to have any secrets?"
"Then why would you cheat on her? You were basically asking for a divorce, and now you won't give her one." He laughed once, chugged his beer, and then set it on the bar.
"Because I thought she'd stay out of my head after that."
"That," I said, nodding to Anthony when he set down a fresh Manhattan, "makes you sound like an idiot." He fingered his bottle.
"I was. I was an idiot. But she won't let me fix it."
I craned my neck at him. "You're still in love with Val?" He kept his eyes on his beer.
"Who do you think gave her the bunny on her desk for her birthday? Damn sure it wasn't Marks."
"Oh, shit," Anthony said.
"I had a bet going with Marks that you were gay."
"Your gaydar is off,"
I said. One side of Anthony's mouth curved up. I bet that he was straight.
Sawyer's nose wrinkled.
Marks thinks I'm gay? What the fuck?
I cackled, and just as Anthony leaned over to speak, Thomas sat in the stool next to me.
Anthony needs to tell you that I'm here,
Thomas said. My back stiffened and my smile faded.
Maddox, I said, greeting him.
No shade, Maddox, Anthony said. I just promised I'd have her back from now on.
Thomas looked confused.
He means no offense, I said.
Oh,
Thomas said.
The usual, Anthony asked, seeming annoyed that I'd had to translate.
I'll have a Jack and Coke tonight,
Thomas said.
You got it.
Sawyer leaned forward.
Bad day, boss?
Thomas didn't answer. Instead, he stared at his hands clasped in front of him on the bar. Sawyer and I traded glances. I continued our conversation.
Does she know?
Of course she knows. She knows everything, Sawyer said with a grimace.
It might just be time to move on. A couple of young guys pushed through the door. I'd never seen them here before, but they walked with their chests puffed out and their arms swinging. I began to turn around as one of them gave me a once-over.
Nice blazer, Yoko,
he said. Sawyer put his foot on the ground and began to stand, but I touched his arm. Ignore them. The Casbah had a rock concert tonight. They're probably coming from there and looking for a fight. Look at the big one's shirt. Sawyer quickly glanced in the pair's direction, pointing out the 2-inch long rip around the collar of the man's t-shirt. We ordered another round. Thomas finished his drink, tossed a bill on the bar, and left without a word.
That was weird,
Sawyer said.
He hasn't been in here in how long?
Over 2 weeks, Anthony said.
Sawyer spoke.
And he shows up, has one drink, and leaves.
Doesn't he usually only have one drink? I asked. Anthony nodded.
But never when he has that look on his face.
I turned toward the door, seeing the ripped t-shirt guy and his friend leaving.
That didn't last long. I heard them say they were bored.
Apparently the service was too slow, Anthony said with a wink.
You're brilliant, I said with a grin.
You should talk to Val one more time, Sawyer. Lay it all out on the table. If she doesn't go for it, though, you need to move out and you need to sign those papers. You're not being fair to her.
You're right. I hate you, but you're right. And no matter what you say, Lindy, we're still friends.
Fine. Sawyer and I tabbed out, said goodbye to Anthony, and then walked across the dark room, pushing out the door. The sidewalk was well lit, traffic was normal, but something was off. Sawyer touched my arm.
You too? I asked.
We carefully approached the corner, and someone groaned. Sawyer meant to take a quick peek around, but he stared, and his mouth fell open.
Oh, shit.
I followed him and immediately pulled out my cell phone. The two men from the bar were lying in matching puddles of blood.
911, what is your emergency?
I have two males, early to mid-20s, badly beaten on the sidewalk in Midtown. They're both going to need an ambulance on the scene. Sawyer checked them both.
This one's unresponsive, he said.
They're both breathing. One is unresponsive. I gave her the address and then pressed end.
Sawyer glanced around.
A middle-aged couple was walking in the opposite direction on the next block, but other than them and a homeless man digging in the trash on the corner to the north, the block was empty. I saw no one who looked suspicious.
Sirens echoed in the distance.
Sawyer shoved his hands in his pants pockets.
I guess they found the fight they were looking for.
Maybe it was the people they had a run-in with earlier?
Sawyer shrugged. Not my jurisdiction.
Funny. A police cruiser arrived within minutes, followed soon after by an ambulance. We told them what we knew, and once we offered them credentials, we were free to leave. Sawyer walked me to the lobby and gave me a hug. Sure you don't want me to walk you home? I asked. Whoever did that could still be out there.
Sawyer chuckled. Shut up, Lindy.
Good night. See you tomorrow.
Nope. I'll be out.
Oh, right. The thing, I said. My head was fuzzy. I was glad we decided to leave the bar when we did. I'm tailing one of our Vegas sources, Arturo.
Benny's guy? Why is he in San Diego? I asked.
Benny sent him to visit his new Eastern family. I'm making sure he stays on the straight and narrow. I don't want the Yakuza guys to scare him into disclosing or alerting them to our interest.
Sounds very official.
It always is. Night.
Sawyer pushed out of the lobby doors, and I turned to press the elevator button. It was smudged with fresh blood. I glanced around and then used the inside of my blazer to clean it. The doors slid open, the chime pleasant and welcoming, but when I stepped inside, my heart sank. The button for the sixth floor was smeared with blood as well. Again, I used my blazer to hide the evidence, and then I waited impatiently for the doors to open. I stomped out and walked straight to Thomas's door, banging on the metal. When he didn't answer, I banged again.
"Who is it?"
Thomas asked from the other side.
"Lise! Open the fuck up!"
A chain rattled, the bolt lock clicked, and then Thomas opened his door. I pushed through, shouldering past him, and then twirled around, crossing my arms. Thomas had an ice pack on his right hand and a bloody bandage on his left.
"Christ, what did you do?" I said, reaching for his bandage.
I carefully peeled it away from his weeping raw knuckles and then looked up at him.
"The racist bastards insulted you."
"So you tried to beat them to death?" I shrieked.
"No. That came after I heard them casually mention that they hoped your route home included a dark alley."
I sighed. "Come on, I'll clean you up."
"I got it."
"Wrapping and icing doesn't constitute cleaning. You're going to get an infection in your joints. Does that sound like fun?" Thomas frowned.
"Okay, then."
Thomas and I went into his bathroom. He sat on the edge of the tub, holding both of his hands in loose fists. "First aid kit?" He nodded toward the sink.
"Underneath."
I pulled out a clear plastic container, unsnapped it, and opened it wide, poking through the various items.
"Peroxide?"
Thomas recoiled. "You can punch two full-grown men until the skin sheds off your knuckles, but you can't handle a few seconds of a fizzy burning sensation?"
"In the medicine cabinet." The mirror pulls open.
"I know, mine too," I deadpanned.
"I tried to walk home without..."
"Attacking them?"
"Some people are belligerent, predatory assholes their entire lives until one person comes along and beats the shit out of them. Gives them a new perspective."
"Is that what you're calling it? You think you did them a favor?" He frowned.
"I did the world a favor."
I poured the hydrogen peroxide over his injuries, and he sucked air through his teeth as he jerked his hands back. I sighed. "I just can't believe you lost your shit like that over a stupid insult and an empty threat." Thomas leaned his face toward his shoulder and used it to wipe his cheek, smearing two small specks of blood. "You should probably bathe in this," I said, holding up the big brown bottle in my hands.
"Why?"
I grabbed tissue from the toilet paper roll and soaked it in the disinfectant. "'Cause I'm fairly certain that's not your blood." Thomas looked up, seeming bored. "I'm sorry, would you like me to leave?" I asked.
"Actually, I would."
"No," I snapped.
"Oh, that insults you."
I dabbed at his wounds with a clean cotton ball. "Strangers can't hurt my feelings, Thomas. People I care about can." His shoulders sagged. He suddenly looked too tired to argue. "What were you doing at Cutter's?" I asked.
"I'm a regular there."
I frowned. "You haven't been."
"I needed a drink."
"Bad Monday?" I asked, wondering if there was ever a good one. He hesitated.
"I called Travis on Friday."
"April Fool's Day?" I asked.
Thomas gave me a few seconds.
"Oh, his birthday."
"He hung up on me."
"Ouch." Right when I said the word, Thomas jerked his hand back.
"Son of a..."
Pressed his lips together, the veins in his neck swelling as he strained. "Sorry," I flinched.
"I miss you,"
Thomas said quietly.
"I'm trying to keep it professional at work. I can't stop thinking about you."
"You've been kind of a bear. People are likening it to the days just post-Camille." He laughed once without humor.
"There's no comparison. This is much, much worse."
I concentrated on wrapping his wounds.
Let's just be glad that we didn't let this get too far.
He nodded.
You should definitely be glad. I wasn't that smart.
I let my hands fall to my lap. What are you talking about? You told me 2 weeks ago that you couldn't love me.
Lise, do you have feelings for me?
You know I do.
Do you love me?
I stared into his desperate eyes for a long time. The more seconds that passed, the more hopeless he looked. I let out a faltering breath. I don't want to be in love, Thomas. He looked down at the bandages on his hands, already dotted red with his blood.
You didn't answer my question.
No.
You're lying. How can you have such a strong personality and be so fucking afraid?
So what? I snapped. You would be scared, too, if I told you I was still in love with Jackson and you were way, way out of your emotional comfort zone.
That's not fair.
I lifted my chin. I don't have to be fair to you, Thomas. I just have to be fair to me. I stood and took a step backward toward the door. He shook his head and chuckled.
You, Lise Lindy, are most definitely my payback.
Chapter 22. The stairs seemed preferable to taking the elevator one floor down. I trudged down to my floor and past my door to walk the few steps to the window at the end of the hallway. The corner across the street was smeared with blood, but no one seemed to notice. The people who walked by had no idea about the violence that had occurred, not even an hour before, in the space they were passing through. A couple stopped just a few feet from the largest stain, arguing. The woman looked both ways and then crossed the street, and I recognized her just before she slipped beneath the awning of our lobby. Marks followed her, and I sighed, knowing they would both be stepping off the elevator minutes later. I went to my door and unlocked it, and then I waited in the open doorway. The elevator chimed, and the doors revealed my friend looking angrier than I'd ever seen her. She stepped out and then stopped abruptly, elbowing Marks when he ran into her.
Are you leaving? She asked me.
No, just getting home. I held the door open. Come in. She passed by and then Marks paused, waiting for my permission. I nodded and he followed her to the couch. I shut the door and turned, crossing my arms. I am not in the mood to Dr. Phil you two. I can't figure out my own shit. I raked my hair away from my face, and then I walked over to the chair, scooping up the folded throw and holding it in my lap as I sat down.
You agree with me, Lise, don't you?
Marks asked. She needs to kick him out.
He won't leave, Val said, exasperated.
Then I'll make him leave, Marks growled.
I rolled my eyes. Come on, Marks, you know the law. He is her husband. If the cops came, you would be the one asked to leave. Marks's jaw worked beneath the skin, and then he looked beyond my kitchen. You have a second bedroom? You invited her.
She doesn't want to lose her condo, I said.
Val's eyes widened. That's what I've told him.
I don't want you living with him. It's fucking weird, Marks said.
Joel, I'm handling this, Val said. If you don't want to stick around, I understand.
I narrowed my eyes. Why are you two here?
Marks sighed.
I came to pick her up for dinner. He made a big deal. Usually, I wait for her outside, but I thought I'd be a fucking gentleman for once. He made a scene. Who's she pissed at? Me.
Why do we do this to ourselves? I asked, mostly to myself.
We're grown adults.
Love makes us so stupid.
He doesn't love me, Val said.
Yes, I do, Mark said, looking at her. She slowly turned to him.
You do?
I chased you for months, and I'm still chasing you. You think this is a casual fling for me?
I love you.
Val's face fell, and her lip jutted out.
I love you, too.
They hugged each other and began to kiss. I looked up at the ceiling, contemplating a tantrum.
Sorry, Val said, fixing her lipstick.
It's fine, I deadpanned.
We should probably get going, Mark said. We barely got a reservation. I don't want to have to drive around looking for a decent meal at 9:30 at night.
I forced a smile and then walked to the door, opening it wide.
Sorry, Val whispered as she passed.
I shook my head. It's fine. I shut the door, walked straight back to my bedroom, and fell, face first, onto my bed. Val and Marx had made finding a solution look so easy, figuring it out even though Val had been sharing a condo with Sawyer for over a year. I was miserable, living an entire floor below Thomas. But our problems seemed more complicated than living with an ex. I loved a man who I couldn't love, who loved someone else, but loved me more. Love could kiss my ass.
The next morning, I was relieved not to see Thomas in the elevator. As the weeks passed, it became less of a worry and more of a memory. Thomas would make sure to arrive at work before me and to stay far later. The meetings were short and tense, and if we were given an assignment, Val, Sawyer, and I hated to come back to Constance empty-handed. The rest of Squad 5 kept their heads down, scowling at me when they thought I wouldn't notice. The days were long. Just being in the squad room was stressful, and I had quickly become everyone's least favorite supervisor in the building. 8 straight days went by without any run-ins with Thomas at Cutter's, and then another week passed. Anthony had given me the number of a friend who knew someone who shipped vehicles, and once I'd called and mentioned Anthony's name, the price dropped in half. By May, my Camry had been delivered, and I was able to explore more of San Diego. Val and I went to the zoo, and I began systematically visiting all the beaches, always alone. It became sort of a thing. It didn't take me long to fall in love with the city, and I wondered if falling quick was going to start being a thing with me, too. That was squashed after several outings with Val, as I began to understand that every interaction with a man just reminded me of how much I missed Thomas. One hot, sticky Saturday night, I pulled into the Kansas City barbecue parking lot and shoved my keys into my purse. Even in a sundress, I could feel the sweat dripping from under my breasts and down to my stomach. It was a heat only the ocean or a pool could alleviate. My skin was slick and my hair was pulled into a loose knot at the top of my head. The humidity reminded me of the island, and I needed to distract myself. I pushed the door open and froze. The first thing in my line of sight was Thomas, standing in front of the dartboard, with a blonde, holding her in one arm as he tried to help her aim a dart with the other. The moment we made eye contact, I turned on my heels and walked quickly to my car. Running was not conducive in wedges. Before I could even clear the front patio, someone rounded the corner, and I plowed into him, getting knocked off my footing. Before I hit the ground, large hands swooped me up.
"What the hell is your hurry?" Mark said, releasing me once I'd found my balance.
"Sorry, I was just coming in here for a late dinner."
"Oh," he said with a knowing smile. "You saw Maddox in there."
I can find somewhere else to eat."
"Lise?"
Thomas called from the doorway.
"She doesn't want to eat here since you're here," Mark yelled back, cupping my shoulder.
Everyone dining on the patio turned to look at me. I pushed Marx's hand away and lifted my chin.
"Fuck off!"
I stomped toward my car.
Marx called after me. "You've been hanging out with Val too long."
I didn't turn around. Instead, I reached into my purse for my keys and pressed the keyless entry. Before I could open the door, I felt hands on me again.
"Lise," Thomas said, breathless from jogging across the parking lot.
I jerked my arm away and yanked the door open.
"She's just a friend. She worked in Constance's position for Polanski when he was the ASAC."
I shook my head. "You don't have to explain."
He pushed his hands into his pocket. "Yeah, I do. You're upset."
"Not because I want to be." I looked up at him. "I'll figure it out. Until then, the avoidance thing is working for me." Thomas nodded once.
"I'm sorry. Upsetting you is the last thing I want to do. You look gorgeous. Were you meeting someone?"
I made a face. "No, I'm not meeting someone. I'm not dating. I don't date," I snapped. "Not that I don't expect you to," I said, motioning to the restaurant. I began to sit in the driver's seat, but Thomas gently held my arm.
"We're not dating," he said. "I was just helping her with darts. Her boyfriend is in there.
I glared at him, dubious. Great. I have to go. I haven't eaten.
Eat here, he said. He offered a hopeful small smile. I can teach you how to play, too.
I'd rather not be one of many, thank you.
You're not. You never have been.
No, just one of two.
Whether you believe it or not, Lise, you've been the only. There's never been anyone else but you.
I sighed. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought it up. I'll see you at work on Monday. We have an early meeting.
Yep, he said,
taking a step back. I slid into the driver's seat and then stabbed the ignition with the key. The Camry made a dainty growl, and then I backed up and pulled away, leaving Thomas alone in the parking lot. The first lit drive-through sign I saw, I pulled in and waited in line. Once I received my non-fuzzy burger and small fries, I drove the rest of the way home. My sack crinkled as I shut my car door, and then I walked to the lobby doors, feeling abysmal that my brilliant plan for distraction couldn't have been more of a failure.
Hey, Val called from across the street.
I looked over at her and she waved.
You're a hot bitch. Come to Cutter's with me.
I lifted my sack.
Dinner? She yelled.
Kind of, I called back.
Fuzzies?
No.
Gross, she yelled. Liquor will be more satisfying.
I sighed and then glanced each way before crossing the street. Val hugged me, and then her smile faded when she noticed my expression.
What's wrong?
I went to KC Barbecue. Thomas was there with a very tall and pretty blonde.
Val pursed her lips. You're way better than her. Everyone knows she's a total skank.
Do you know her? I asked. She's Polanski's assistant.
Oh, Val said. No, Allie is super sweet, but we're going to pretend she's a skank.
Allie, I whined, puffing out a breath like the wind had been knocked out of me. The name sounded exactly like the perfect girl who Thomas could fall in love with. Kill me now. She hooked her arm around me.
I'm packing heat. I can if you want.
I leaned my head onto her shoulder. You're a good friend.
I know,
Val said, guiding me to Cutter's. Chapter 23 I forced a smile for Agent Trevino while stopped at the check-in, and then I steered my Camry toward the parking garage. I was already in a foul mood from the weekend, and the fact that it was Monday wasn't helping matters. Thomas was right. I did hate driving on the freeway, and that annoyed me as well. I found a parking space and pushed the gear forward into park. Then I grabbed my purse and brown leather messenger bag. Shoving the door open, I stepped out to see Agent Grove struggling to get out of his blue sedan. Morning, I said. He simply nodded, and we headed for the elevator bay. I pressed the button, trying not to tip him off that I was nervous to have him standing behind me. He coughed into his hand, and I used that as an excuse to glance back. My sleek ponytail whipped over my right shoulder as I did so. Summer colds are the worst.
Allergies, he grumbled, almost to himself.
The elevator opened, and I stepped on, followed by Grove. His pale blue shirt and too small tie made his expansive midsection look even more pronounced. How are the interviews going? I asked. Grove's wiry mustache twitched.
It's a little early to engage in chit-chat, Agent Lendy.
I raised my eyebrows and then faced forward, holding my hands in front of me. The seventh floor chimed, and I stepped into the hallway. I glanced back at Grove, who glared at me until the doors slid shut. Val merged with me as I approached the security doors.
Open the door, open the door, open the...
We're not finished, Mark said with a grimace. Val instantly switched on a smile and turned around.
For now we are.
No, we're not, Mark said, his bright blue eyes flaming. I pushed open the door and Val took a step backward.
But we are, so we are.
When the door closed in Mark's face, she turned back around and squeezed my arm.
Thank you.
What was that about? She rolled her eyes and puffed out a breath.
He still wants me to move out of my condo.
Well, I wouldn't like my boyfriend living with his wife either.
Marx is not my boyfriend, and Sawyer is not my husband. Your status with Marks is debatable, but you are definitely still married to Sawyer. He hasn't signed the papers yet? We turned into my office, and Val shut the door before falling into a club chair.
No. He came home from Cutter's one night, going on and on about how Davies was a mistake.
Wait, Agent Davies?
Yes.
But you...
Val's nose wrinkled, and when recognition hit, she jumped out of the chair.
No, ew, ew! Even if I were a lesbian, I'd much prefer chapstick to lipstick. Agent Davies looks like a reject from a Cher lookalike concert with all that...
She circled her face with her index finger.
Stuff on her face.
So when you said you experienced both Sawyer and Davies, you meant because he'd cheated on you with her?
Yes,
she said, still disgusted. She sat back in the chair, keeping her butt on the edge while letting her shoulders fall back against the cushion. If you say that to anyone else, you might consider clarifying.
Val let that thought simmer, and then she closed her eyes, her shoulders sagging.
Shit. You're not going to forgive Sawyer? I asked.
God, no.
What keeps you there, Val? I know it's your condo, but that can't be all there is to it.
She lifted her arms before letting them slap to her thighs. That's it.
Lie.
Well, now, she said, sitting up and crossing her arms. Look who is honing her craft.
More like common sense, I said. Now, if you're going to be a bad friend, shoo. I have work to do.
I shuffled papers, pretending to be disinterested.
I can't forgive him, she said, her voice small.
I've tried. I could have forgiven anything else.
Really?
She nodded.
Have you told him that?
She picked at her nails. Pretty much.
You need to tell him, Val. He still thinks there's a chance.
I'm dating Marks. Sawyer still thinks I'm hung up on him?
You are married to him.
Val sighed. You're right. It's time. But I warn you, if I put down the hammer and he doesn't budge, you might have a new roommate.
I shrugged.
I'll help you pack.
Val left with a smile, and I opened my laptop, input the password, and began scrolling through my emails. Three from Constance marked urgent caught my eye. I directed the mouse to the first email and clicked. Agent Lindy, ASAC Maddox requests a meeting at 1000. Please clear your schedule and have your case file in hand. Constance. I opened the second. Agent Lindy, ASAC Maddox requests the meeting to be moved to 0900. Please be prompt and have your case file in hand. Constance. I opened the third. Agent Lindy, ASAC Maddox insists that you report to his office the moment you receive this email. Please have your case file in hand. Constance. I looked at my watch. It was barely 8 a.m. I grabbed the mouse and clicked through recent documents, printing the new intel I had accumulated. I grabbed the file folder, snatched the papers off the printer, and ran down the hall.
Hi, Constance, I said, winded.
She looked up at me and smiled, batting her long black lashes.
He can see you now.
Thank you, I breathed, walking past her. Thomas was sitting with his back to me, staring at the gorgeous view outside of his corner office. Agent Maddox, I said, trying to sound normal.
I'm sorry, I just saw the email.
I brought the case file. I have a few more.
Have a seat, Lindy.
I blinked and then did as he'd commanded. The three mysterious picture frames were still on his desk, but the center frame was lying on its face.
I can't make them wait any longer,
Thomas said.
The office of the Inspector General wants an arrest.
Travis?
He turned.
The skin under his eyes was purple. He looked like he'd lost weight.
No, no. Grove. Travis will start his training soon. If Grove hears from Benny or Taru about Travis, well, we'll be dead in the water anyway. Constance, we'll send everything you have to the U.S. Attorney's Office. They're going to stage an armed robbery at the gas station he frequents. He'll be shot. Witnesses will testify that he was killed. Then, Taru and Benny will think they're shit out of luck instead of packing up and destroying evidence because Grove was busted and all roads lead to their criminal activity.
Sounds like a home run, sir. Thomas winced at my cold response and then sat behind his desk. We remained in awkward silence for a solid 10 seconds, and then Thomas made the smallest gesture toward the door.
Thank you, Agent Lindy. That will be all.
I nodded and stood up.
I walked to the door, but I couldn't leave. Against my better judgment, I turned, holding my free hand in a fist and tightly gripping the file folder so that I wouldn't drop it. He was reading the top page of a stack, holding a highlighter in one hand with the cap in the other. "Are you taking care of yourself, sir?" Thomas blanched.
"Am I... excuse me?"
"Taking care of yourself. You seem tired."
"I'm fine, Lindy. That will be all."
I gritted my teeth and then took a step forward. "Because if you need to talk..." He let both hands fall to his desk.
"I don't need to talk, and even if I did, you would be the last person I would talk to."
I nodded once. "I'm sorry, sir."
"Stop calling me that," he said,
lowering his voice at the end. I held my hands in front of me. "I feel it's no longer appropriate to call you Thomas."
"Agent Maddox, or Maddox, is fine."
He looked down at his paper.
"Now please, please leave, Lindy."
"Why did you call me in here if you didn't want to see me? You could have just as easily had Constance take care of it."
"Because once in a while, Lise, I just need to see your face. I need to hear your voice. Some days are tougher for me than others."
I swallowed and then walked toward his desk. He braced himself for what I might do next. "Don't do that," I said. "Don't make me feel guilty. I tried not to... This is exactly what I didn't want."
"I know. I accept full responsibility."
"This isn't my fault."
"I just said that," he said,
sounding exhausted. "You all but asked for this. You wanted your feelings for me to replace your feelings for Camille. You needed someone closer to blame because you couldn't blame her. You have to get along because she's going to be family and I'm just someone you work with. Someone you knew would move on." Thomas seemed too emotionally drained to argue.
"Christ, Lise, do you really think I planned this?
How many ways do I have to tell you?
What I felt for you, what I still feel for you, makes my feelings for Camille insignificant."
I covered my face. "I feel like I sound like a broken record."
"You do," he said, his voice flat.
"You think this is easy for me?" I asked.
"Certainly seems that way."
"Well, it's not. I thought, not that it matters now, but that weekend, I hoped that I could change. I thought, for two wounded people, if we were invested enough, if we felt enough, then we could make it."
"We're not wounded, Lise. We're matching scars."
I blinked. "If we ran into unfamiliar territory, which is everything for me, we could adjust for variables, you know? But I can't throw away every plan I have for my future on the hope that one day you'll stop being sad because you're not with her." I felt tears burning my eyes. "If I were going to give you my future, I'd need you to move on from the past." I grabbed the flat frame and held it in Thomas's face, forcing him to look at it. His eyes left mine, and when he scanned over the photograph beneath the glass, one side of his mouth turned up. Incensed, I turned the picture around, and then my mouth fell open. Thomas and I were inside the frame together. A black and white snapshot. The one Phelan had taken of us in St. Thomas. He was squeezing me against him, kissing my cheek. And I was smiling like forever was real. I picked up the other frame and looked at it. It was all five Maddox brothers. I picked up the last one to see his parents.
"I loved her first,"
Thomas said.
"But you, Lise, you are the last woman I will ever love."
I stood there, speechless, and then retreated toward the door.
"Can I have my pictures back?"
he asked. I realized then that I had left the file on his desk, and instead I'd walked off with the pictures in my hands. I slowly walked over to him. He held out his hand and I returned the frames. "I'll just give this to Constance," I said, picking up the file, feeling disoriented. I turned on my heels and bolted.
"Lise,"
he called after me. The moment I breached the door, I practically tossed the file at Constance. "Have a good day, Agent Lindy," she said, her voice carrying through the squad room. I withdrew to my office and sat down in my chair, putting my head in my hands. Seconds later, Val burst in from the hall, and Marks came in after her, slamming the door behind him.
I looked up.
Val pointed at him.
Stop! You can't chase me all over the building!
I'll stop following you when you start giving me straight answers, he yelled.
What the hell is wrong with everyone today? Has this entire office gone crazy? I yelled.
I've already given you an answer, Val said, ignoring me. I told you I would talk to him tonight.
Sawyer popped his head in, knocking as he did so.
Boss?
Get out! Marks, Val, and I yelled in unison.
Okay, then, Sawyer said, ducking out.
And then what? Marks asked.
If he won't move out, I will, Val said, as if the words had been punched out of her.
Thank Christ, Marks yelled to an invisible audience, pointing all his fingers in Val's general direction. A straight fucking answer.
Thomas blew in.
What the hell is with all the shouting?
I covered my face again.
Are you all right, Lise? What happened to her, Val? Is she all right?
Thomas asked. Marks spoke first.
I'm sorry, sir. Are you okay, Lindy?
I'm fine, I shrieked. I just need you toddlers to get the fuck out of my office! All three of them froze, staring at me in disbelief.
Get out!
Val and Marks left first, and then, after some reluctance, Thomas left me alone, closing the door behind him. The rest of Squad 5 stared at me. I walked over to the glass wall, flipped them all both of my middle fingers, shot off several strong words in Japanese, and then pulled the blinds closed. Chapter 24. I readjusted my cell phone so it sat better between my cheek and my shoulder while I tried to cook. Hang on, Mom, just a sec, I said, resorting to setting the phone on the cabinet. You know I hate the speakerphone, her voice wafted with the spices in the air. Lise, take me off the speakerphone.
I'm the only one here, Mom. No one else can hear you. I need both hands.
At least you're cooking for yourself and not eating that processed poison every night. Have you gained any weight?
I've lost a few pounds, actually, I said, smiling even though she couldn't see me.
Not too much, I hope, she grumbled. I laughed.
Mom, you're never happy.
I just miss you. When are you coming home? You're not going to wait until Christmas, are you? What are you cooking? Is it any good?
I added broccoli, carrots, and water to the hot canola oil and then pushed them around the skillet as it sizzled.
I miss you, too. I don't know. I'll look at my schedule. Chicken and vegetable stir-fry, and hopefully it will be amazing.
Have you mixed the sauce? You have to mix it first, you know, to let it blend and breathe.
Yes, Mom, it's sitting on the counter next to me.
Did you add anything extra? It's good, just the way I make it.
I giggled. No, Mom, it's your sauce.
Why are you eating so late?
I'm on West Coast time.
Still, it's 9 there. You shouldn't eat so late.
I work late, I said with a smile.
They're not keeping you too busy at work, are they?
I'm keeping me too busy. I like it that way, though. You know that.
You're not walking alone at night, are you?
Yes, I teased, in just my underwear.
Please, she scolded.
I laughed out loud, and it felt good. It seemed as if I hadn't smiled in a long time.
Lise, she said, concern in her voice. I'm here. Are you homesick?
Just for you guys.
Tell Daddy I say hi.
Patrick?
Patrick! Lise says hello.
I could hear my father from somewhere in the room.
Hi, baby. Miss you. Be good.
He started the fish oil pills this week. Gives him gas, she said.
I could hear the scowl in her voice, and I laughed again.
I miss you both.
Goodbye, Mom.
I pressed the end button with my pinky, and then I added in the chicken and the cabbage. Just before adding the pea pods and sauce, someone knocked on the door. I waited, thinking I'd imagined it, but the knocking happened again, louder this time.
Oh, no.
Oh, crap, I said to myself, turning the heat almost all the way down. I wiped my hands on a dish towel and jogged to the door. I peeked through the peephole, and then I scrambled to open the chain and bolt lock, grabbing at it like a madwoman.
Thomas, I whispered.
unable to hide my utter shock. He was standing there in a plain white t-shirt and workout shorts. He hadn't even taken the time to put on shoes, gauging by his bare feet. He began to speak, but thought better of it.
"What are you doing here?" I asked.
"Smells good in there," he said, taking a whiff.
"Yeah," I turned toward the kitchen. "Stir fry. I have plenty, if you're hungry."
"It's just you?"
he asked, looking past me. I chuckled. "Of course it's just me. Who else would be here?" He stared at me for several seconds.
"You're wearing my hoodie."
I looked down. "Oh, do you want it back?" He shook his head.
"No. No way. I just didn't realize you still wore it."
"I wear it a lot. Makes me feel better sometimes."
I needed to speak to you. The office is buzzing about your outburst.
Just mine? I'm the emotional one because I'm a woman. Typical, I muttered.
Lise, you spoke in Japanese at the office. Everyone knows.
I blanched. I'm sorry. I was upset and I... Shit.
The SAC gave the green light to move forward with the plan to remove Grove.
Good. I hugged my middle, feeling vulnerable.
But they haven't found him.
What? What about Sawyer? I thought he was the master of surveillance. Doesn't he keep tabs on Grove?
Sawyer's out there, looking for Grove now. Don't worry. Sawyer will find him. Do you want me to stay with you?
I looked at him. His expression was begging me to say yes. I wanted him here, but it would only mean long conversations that would lead to arguments, and we were both tired of fighting. I shook my head. No, I'll be okay. The skin around his eyes softened. He took a step and reached up, cupping each side of my face. He gazed into my eyes, his inner conflict swirling in his twin hazel-green pools.
"Fuck it,"
he said. He leaned in and touched his lips to mine. I dropped the dish towel and reached up to grip his t-shirt in my fists, but he was in no hurry to leave. He took his time tasting me, feeling the warmth of our mouths melding together. His lips were confident and commanding, but giving way as my mouth pressed against them. Just when I thought he might pull away, he wrapped both arms around me. Thomas kissed me as if he had needed me for ages, and at the same time, he kissed me goodbye. It was longing and sadness and anger, twisted but controlled, in a sweet, soft kiss. When he finally released me, I felt myself leaning forward, needing more. He blinked a few times.
I tried not to. I'm sorry.
Then he walked away. No, it's fine, I said, to an empty hallway. I closed the door and leaned against it, still tasting him. Where I stood still smelled like him. For the first time since I'd moved in, my apartment didn't feel like a sanctuary or the representation of my independence. It just felt lonely. The stir-fry didn't smell as good as it had minutes before. I looked over at the girls in the Takato painting, remembering that Thomas had helped me hang them. Not even they could make me feel better. I stomped over to the stovetop, switched it off, and grabbed my purse and keys. The elevator seemed to be taking an extraordinary amount of time to reach the lobby, and I bounced in anticipation. I needed out of the building, out from under Thomas's condo. I needed to be sitting in front of Anthony with a Manhattan in my hand, forgetting about Grove and Thomas and what I'd refused to let myself have. I looked both ways and crossed the street in wide strides, but just as I reached the sidewalk, a large hand encircled my arm, stopping me in my tracks.
"Where the hell are you going?"
Thomas asked. I yanked back my arm and shoved him away. He barely moved, but I still covered my mouth and then held my hands at my chest. "Oh, God, I'm sorry. It was a knee-jerk reaction." Thomas frowned.
"You can't just go walking around alone right now, Lise. Not until we get a location on Grove."
A couple stood 10 feet away on the corner, waiting for the light to change. Other than that, we were alone. I puffed out a breath of relief, my heart still racing.
You can't just go around grabbing people like that. You're lucky you didn't end up like Drunk Joe.
Thomas's smile slowly stretched across his face.